We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
This is Greg Olson, inviting you to check out my new Blue Wire podcast, TE1, where I interview tight ends throughout the history of the NFL who have helped revolutionize the position. TE1 is presented by the Chevy Silverado. The Silverado is all about grit. It's strong and dependable, exactly like playing tight end. Just like the incredible players we sit down with on the podcast, the Chevy Silverado is in a league of its own. Strong, advanced, and dependable. Download TE1 today, wherever you listen to podcasts.
Aikman is intercepted by Sam Mills.
Steve Smith is going to go all the way. Panthers win in overtime.
Newton steps up, throws for the end zone. Olsen, touchdown. Brian Burns to the house.
This one is picked again. Intercepted by Boston.
Bridgewater. Throw into the end zone. Touchdown!
Samuel still on his feet inside the five to the end zone. Touchdown! What a play!
And it is caught for the touchdown by Moore.
He is McCaffrey. And in the foot race, McCaffrey to the end zone.
Keep pounding on three. One, two, three.
Keep pounding.
Welcome back to The Roar, presented by Blue Wire. And to help us preview the Atlanta Falcons this week, I have my good friend Alan Stark. You can find him on Twitter at Alan_STRK. He's been covering the Falcons for many years. I've been a good friend of his on Twitter, exchanging thoughts and ideas. Alan, welcome.
Thank you for having me. The NFC South Division rivalry game, always gotta love it, even though I feel like the past few years, Falcons, Panthers, they've been in kind of a few drab matchups. And I don't know, just based on where the teams are right now. I know Carolina's picking up a little bit of buzz, but it just feels like kind of another dud of a matchup.
Yeah, no, I mean, it definitely does. I think there's a little more intrigue with Carolina, especially this week now, because they've won their last two games, and last week they did it in a pretty impressive fashion, completely shutting down the Cardinals. Their offense has looked sort of competent. But we're here to talk about the Falcons, and I think many fans would be disappointed with their not only their record, but just in the manner in which they've lost these games. It's sort of been baffling because huge lead against Dallas on the road, and they blow that, and another huge lead against Chicago, and they blow that too. And we'll get into a more deeper understanding of why this is happening, but it just seems pretty toxic right now with the Falcons. Am I wrong?
Toxic is a pretty accurate term you could use. Even though they are firmly behind Dan Quinn. Dan Quinn, as you know, is a very much a player's coach, but I think deep down, just they really should be 2-2. But then even you look at the losses to Seattle and Green Bay, they were thoroughly outplayed. And just that Monday night game, you never felt like they were competitive from the first possession. Like just the way Green Bay marched downfield, it just seemed like, okay, this is going to be a thorough beating. Even though the scoreline might not suggest it, it was just pretty comprehensive. And I think also doesn't help the injuries. You know, Ricardo Allen, Keanu Neal, Tack McKinley have all been injured. Julio Jones has played maybe 2.5 games this year, I bet, at most. Mm-hmm. So injuries definitely don't help. But look, there are a lot of teams facing adversity right now, given what's going on with COVID. And, you know, injuries are always going to be a part of the sport. So just right now with the Falcons, like this looking like the third straight year where they're going to be at the playoff hunt by November, which is just insane when you look at, you know, their roster. And then, of course, Matt Ryan, you know, essentially being at the peak of his career.
Yeah, and I want to focus on Matt Ryan because I know there's always, you know, just typical fan rivalries. Some people like to talk down on Matt Ryan, but I've always been a huge fan of his. I think he's perennially not only just underrated, but just a really good quarterback. I mean, you talk about ball placement, you talk about accuracy, you talk about pocket presence, everything. I think this guy, I mean, maybe his arm strength isn't like the best in the world, but I think he's probably like one of the best quarterbacks that we've seen in the last like decade or so. And we saw in 2016 when they had one of the best offenses probably in NFL history. And since then, I feel like with Steve Sarkisian and now Dirk Cutter, it's just they've gone away from doing what helps him kind of – they're not playing to his strengths, essentially. I mean, you compare that with some of the other teams in the NFC South, how the Saints play to Drew Brees' strength. The Bucs are obviously doing that with Brady, and you're seeing some of that with Bridgewater and the Panthers. I just feel like the Falcons are completely, like, dismissing that.
And you hear all this talk now with Aaron Rodgers and Matt LaFleur. As you know, Matt LaFleur was on the Falcons coaching staff during the 2016 season. And people are talking about Oral Rodgers on the LaFleur that second year, somewhat reminiscent of Matt Ryan, Kyle Shanahan, just brings you back to those memories for the Falcons. It's just like, oh, wow. You hear Matt Ryan, that's where he was. We got here about 2016 again. Meanwhile, now he's been in this very constrained offense where it's like, okay, when second long, they're going to run a draw. Or here, they're going to force feed a screen. Or they're not going to use play action much, not much at all. I don't know what the percentage is, but it's just you see how much teams are using play actions and just trying to create those high percentage looks, mm-hmm. and you know not trying to put their teams in third and long situations and everything that you see. You know, when it comes to trends of what coaches like LaFleur and Shanahan, even Kevin Stefanski now, you know, they're putting their quarterbacks in favorable positions. Everything the Falcons are doing right now is putting Matt Ryan at a disadvantage. And look, he hasn't played well the last 2 weeks. I've been kind of disappointed with some of his throws, especially when it comes to more of the intermediate stuff where I think he's usually pretty precise. But it's just, wow, their cutter. You know, he's the poster child for Falcons fans when it comes to jokes. And he there's no defense for it. There really is none.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I thought Dirk Cutter was sort of the perfect coach for Jameis Winston. And you saw Winston posted some pretty amazing numbers when Cutter was the offensive coordinator and head coach of the Bucs. Obviously, they weren't winning games, but I think that's partly due to a number of reasons. But I feel like for Matt Ryan, and this isn't a knock on Ryan, Jameis is like a completely different quarterback. He's more of a guy who likes to take shots down the field. He doesn't really care about how tight the window is. But Ryan is more precision-based. He's more, find an outlet than place the ball exactly where he needs to be. And there's just like zero motion. You mentioned it earlier, no play action. And I mean, it's not like they don't have good skill players. They do. I mean, Gurley, we can discuss later about how effective he is, but he looks fine to me. And then obviously Julio and Calvin Ridley and then Hayden Hurst, you guys spent a second round pick on him. So they have a pretty good talent base at the skill area. And then the offensive line, it's gone through a lot of investments. Mm-hmm. I think that's a pretty good unit too. So it's the talent is clearly there. It's just there's something about how this scheme is not really playing to the strengths of the offense.
Well said. And it also doesn't help because I think now it's starting, I don't know if it's taking a toll, but you know, 2018, 2019, the Falcons were losing a lot of games and Matt Ryan essentially had to be perfect. There wasn't much room for leeway. I wonder if now it's taking a toll on him, especially with Julio not really being there the past 2 weeks because Ryan's played really badly in two games, especially against Chicago. I thought he just kind of responsible for that collapse. I know everyone's at the top of the defense, but when you can't put together two, you can't produce like two first downs on a drive. It's like, okay, this defense is not here. They can't be on the field for so long. Because as you know, this defense has so many flaws. But I do wonder, like, as a quarterback, it's like you're in a position where it's like your defense is going to allow at least 27 points a game, if not more. And does it take a toll on you where it's like, okay, I got to put up 350 and three TDs a week, and I can't really afford to take too many chances, because if I turn it over once, it's likely going to cost us 7 points. So you know, I do wonder if that toll is to him, because he's going to be 36 come next year. And, oh, man, he's the last two seasons, he's taken more than 40 sacks. So I do wonder if the toll and the punishment's catching up to him.
And that's a good segue, because I do look at the offensive line. I think – Matthews is obviously a very consistent and reliable left tackle, and he's been that way for ever since he joined the Falcons. And then McGarry, you guys invested a first-round pick a year ago. He looks pretty good this season. He's only allowed one pressure on the year. And, you know, the interior, Alex Mack was a big acquisition for you guys in 2015 or 16 when Shanahan was there. And then he's surrounded by Chris Lindstrom and James Carpenter, if I'm not mistaken. How have you seen that unit? Because I think most people would realize that, yes, like, their tackles are pretty good and reliable, but what's the dynamic been like with the interior of the offensive line?
Mac's definitely getting up there in age. You don't see him being able to get in space or just trying to make those, you know, especially when it goes against nose tackles. Mac's always been undersized, but, you know, stuff that he was doing in 2016, 2017, you just don't see as much. Now, granted, you know, they've moved more to a power scheme ever since Cutter came in, so I don't know if that really suits his skill set, because when Chan and even Sarkisian to extent, they knew, you know, when it comes to running, you know, outside zone, like, Mac was just destroying linebackers, and you just got him in space. Now, I don't know, you don't see making those high-impact blocks. And, you know, they're rotating left guard right now. It's not just Carpenter. They have Matt Hennessy, who was actually really struggling in pass protection. He was, I think he played center at Temple, and now they shift him to left guard. But he looks overwhelmed there so far. Now, granted, he's gone against likes of, because Darius Smith was eating him up. Now, granted, Darius Smith, you can make a case so far he could be defensive player of the year. I know no one talks about him too much. You know, Aaron Donald brings supreme over defensive player, but it's Darius Smith. Oof, you can play him anywhere. But the offense, I say the offense line, they haven't played up to expectations, especially Lindstrom. Lindstrom's been a bit of a disappointment, because there was high expectations because he showed some promise, even though he was only healthy for pretty much five games last year. But he hasn't really been much of an anchor. It's just, I don't know, between them running a lot of power and just they're trying to maul teams, when in reality they're probably one of the more athletic offensive line in the league outside of
you're right,
Carpenter. Yeah, outside of Carpenter, those guys can move. And Hennessy is your prototypical, you know, outside zone guy. But I just think, once again, kind of that issue with Cutter and just the scheme has kind of hindered them. But but pass protection gets better. Now, granted, they, you know, I don't know, like, Chicago ate them up pretty good, but they haven't gone against too many front fours, and I don't know how much Carolina could offer. But I'm going to just say, like, because I know Brian Burns has been picking up some steam. Like, McGarry versus Brian Burns should be one of those nice matchups in the trenches.
Yeah, for sure. So I think Carolina's defensive line, it's obviously young. You know, believe it or not, Burns is probably like the veteran of the group, even though he's a second year player. But
well, no, they want short though, right?
I mean, he's more of a rotational guy right now. He's been injured off and on. He was healthy last week, but again, he's not really playing as many snaps as he once did. But Derrick Brown, their first round rookie, he's not really too much of a pass rusher. I think we saw that coming out of Auburn. You know, his strengths more rely on eating up the line of scrimmage and holding the point of attack. And he's been really, really good against the run the last 2 weeks. So I expect that to continue, because that's sort of the player that I project him to be. And then Yetur Gross-Matos, they drafted early second round. And he had a sack, a forced fumble last week against Arizona, and he's been picking it up. So it's a young group. I do expect Burns to play well, but outside of that, it's sort of a question mark. So maybe this is an opportunity for the Falcons to, you know, make their presence known on the offensive line. But regardless, I think that area is not sort of where that game will be dictated, in my opinion. It's more about how the Falcons passing game, how they will work against Carolina's. I would say it's an obscure secondary. It they're doing really well so far this year over their expectations, but the talent level, it's not great, unfortunately. But and just transitioning to that area, I'm not sure what the status is of Julio Jones, but Calvin Ridley is, you know, the highest graded player according to Pro Football Focus, for the Falcons offense. And then they obviously have Russell Gage. I mentioned Hayden Hurst earlier too. What's the receiver situation looking like? And can you provide any type of status on Julio's availability this week?
I'm going to assume Julio's going to be out just because, especially with soft tissue injuries, it takes more than a week. I think they kind of rushed him back for that Green Bay game, given just the adversity they're facing going into that. You know, I think he lasted till about the second quarter, and it's just mm-hmm. at this point with the hamstring, it might take 2 to 3 weeks. So I'm expecting him to be out. Hayden Hurst, I know early on they tried to get him involved, but he's become somewhat of like an afterthought. I don't know if it's against Chicago. They used him a lot to chip Khalil Mack, which is kind of ineffective. Khalil Mack was just rolling through everyone. So he could be more weapons because, as you know, Cutter likes to feature tight ends. But I don't know, Hayden Hurst is nothing really more than a 5 to 6 target, what I've seen so far. I do think he is someone that's dangerous, definitely going up seam or off play action.
Right.
This athleticism could cause problems, but I think the rapport between Ryan and Gage is something to be on the lookout for. Gage, I think, is tied with Keenan Allen for most catches on third down, and these aren't like 5-6 yard little Jarvis Landry, you know, short outs. Like, these are going for first downs. Like, Gage is a very good slot receiver, so I would say be on the lookout for him. He's someone that is a really good route runner, very good after the catch, very physical. He's someone that I think people are going to start recognizing, especially given you talk about third down. I forget what the third down percentage is on season, but Ryan Gage has been just almost as on point as Ryan DeRidley is here.
For sure. So what has been your impression of Todd Gurley this season? Obviously, we saw towards the end of his tenure with the Rams, he's kind of slowing down, but a lot of expectation on him to replace the production that Freeman provided. So what has been your impression of how he's done so far?
First two games, I thought, oh boy, he kind of looks like damaged goods. Like, he was not breaking tackles. He wasn't really reading. And he's always had a very good vision, but it just seemed like he lacked the burst, lacked the just being able to maneuver past defenders even when the blocking wasn't there. There just seemed no juice there, a little substance. I was like, okay, he might just be another guy, and, you know, 1 year deal, he's got to take on the chin, take the L. But these last 2 weeks, I've been really impressed. Like, I thought he was their only bright spot against the Packers. Like, he was running with some authority, and even when blocking wasn't there, he used his vision, and he was able to jump cut to the outside. I mean, he was taking on defenders. Chicago, he started looking better, but I thought he's coming off his best game against Green Bay. And even though he doesn't have the breakaway speed anymore just because of the lingering knee issue, which, you know, has definitely dampened his career, I still think he possesses the, you know, the vision, the awareness to really make a difference, especially when he gets to the second level, because he's still running through contact. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like that the first 2 weeks, but he was breaking tackles in Chicago and then especially against Green Bay. You saw on the first touchdown run. So I've been pretty impressed with Gurley, like, all things considered, because I had little expectations. Like, I thought they should sign Melvin Gordon over. If you want to sign over Frazier running back, I was like, you go for Melvin Gordon. But, you know, due to the Georgia connection, and, you know, I think Thomas Dimitro wants to sell jerseys. That's how they operate in Atlanta. They got to try to get the hometown thing going on. It's cool, whatever. But I thought the Gore would have been a better signing. But Gurley, I will say, has definitely offered a lot these past 2 weeks, especially during a time when, you know, Julio has been healthy and they kind of need some boost because, you know, once again, I think Dan Quinn's a little old school minded and he really wants to run the ball.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, let's switch over to defense now, because this is a pretty interesting unit. And Dan Quinn has been involved with the defense in some aspects since he arrived in Atlanta. But as we know, the Falcons have never really produced an effective defense since he's been here, and he's been caught under a lot of scrutiny because of that. But, I mean, this unit does have some talent. And I do want to get your – I want to start with the secondary first, because it does seem like their first-round rookie, A.J. Terrell, is active again. He was on the COVID list. But outside of him, in the secondary, you have Keanu Neal and the other quarterback, Isaiah Oliver, I believe he played. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if he's starting or whatnot. And I know they signed Denard late in the free agency process. Ricardo Allen is obviously someone who's been pretty reliable. What's been your impression of how this secondary has done, because it just doesn't seem when watching them that they're in the right place at the right time.
Outside of Oliver, all of them missed time. Denard's currently on IR. I think he'll be on IR for at least the next 3 weeks. Obviously, Terrell's been on the COVID list. Allen, Neal both didn't play. They just lost DeMonte Casey for a year, torn Achilles. So there's been a lot of moving parts. And ironically, Isaiah Oliver's about the only player that's been on the field. And you know, he's shown improvement. He's better at locating the ball downfield because he committed a lot of penalties the last year. But he's always prone to a mistake. It's just a lack of concentration or just poor technique. Oliver is always bound to make one mistake. But I think Kendall Sheffield, who played his first game against Green Bay, showed a lot of promise. Like, he's someone that you could slide inside or you can put on the outside. He was a fourth-round pick from Iowa State. And even though he's a little undersized, he has very good ball skills, and he's someone that doesn't mind playing pressing coverage. So I could see him maybe shadowing Robbie Anderson throughout the game. That could be a match to be on the lookout for. But it's just right now at the secondary, there's just a lot of moving parts, and now they have to adjust out Casey because Casey has played, I think, majority of snaps. Like, him and Ricardo Allen have been rotating, but Allen's also been dinged up. So the secondary, it's a bit of a train wreck. And I don't know, Raheem Morris was someone that a lot of people were high on. They thought, okay, maybe having him as a defense coordinator will inject some life back into the defense, just some new ideas, because Dan Quinn is about as vanilla as it gets. But you know, whether it's the lack of talent or just maybe Quinn's influence, it's just the defense, they haven't really shown much when it comes to different coverage looks or schemes. They're blitzing a little bit more, but blitzes have been effective. And then the secondary, just they've been on the receiving end of a lot of breakdowns. And you just saw against Green Bay, there was so much miscommunication. People could talk about, oh, injuries here, injuries there, but they had time to prepare. And it's just, they've been seeing this since 2018. It's like, this is the third year in a row where it's just making the same mistakes. And at some point, you got to hold the coaches to accountable.
Right. No, I mean, you're totally right. I mean, it's not like these players don't have talent. I was pretty high on Isaiah Oliver. They guys drafted him high. Same with Terrell, I thought was fine, even though he might have been a little bit of a reach. And Keanu Neal and Ricardo Allen have proven that they're good players. So, you know, at some point, the coaches need to put their players in right position and ask them to do things that they're good at. I mean, it's not too difficult. And I'm actually curious, before I go to the other positions on defense, what has been the dynamic like with the defensive play calls? Because we saw at the end of last season, when they went on that run, I think Dan Quinn gave the defensive play calling responsibilities to a couple coaches. Is that still holding the same?
Yeah, Jeff Ulbrich, who's like 11 years on the 49ers, is a linebacker. He's still doing like first and second down, while Raheem Morris is calling third down. But as you know, like, Morris, as defense coordinator, he works more with personnel. Raheem Morris has been there since like 2015. Like, once Quinn hired, he was there as a defensive backs coach, so he has a very close relationship with a lot of these players from the beginning. So his voice is very important. I think right now, maybe because they're facing Rodgers, but just some of the blitz schemes they're putting up, it's just, there was nothing there to, like, they're blitzing a lot with safeties, and it's just, the alignment's really weird. And then, you know, they signed Dante Fowler, and they're just using him a lot on twists, and they're dropping the coverage. It's just, they're throwing a lot up against the wall and seeing what sticks, and not really anything sticking. Like, okay, great, Jared does his thing, but you know, it's just, they're kind of hoping, because with Seattle there, you know, everyone knows what the Seattle 3, that style of defense is becoming kind of played out. And teams that have really called out Atlanta, I'll never forget Kiki Kuti last year after Houston blew out the Falcons. Well, I didn't blow up, but he put up like 55 against the Falcons, and that was the crazy Will Fuller game. Kiku T basically says, oh, we knew the defense beginning, and we knew what the spots were to attack in the secondary. Like, they play one of the softest looks in the league. It's not hard to figure out. So when you have opposing teams talking about like that, just like, oh, boy. And I don't know, just they're kind of throwing, like I said, throwing stuff against the wall. That's pretty much it, but I don't know what else they can do, because it's like, okay, the whole defense is, they want to get pressure with the front four, and they just don't have the talent up front, especially with Tack McKinley being banged up. They don't have the talent to generate that pressure.
Yeah, that's certainly a fair point. And let's actually go into those, to the front seven. I want to stick with the defensive line. Tack McKinley, high drafted player. Dante Fowler, you guys paid big money this offseason. Grady Jarrett, one of the best defensive tackles in the NFL. I don't think there's any question about that. And then the other defensive linemen, you guys have a rotation there. But I think those three guys, you'd expect them to at least, you know, their defensive line to produce a lot of pressures and sacks. So what do you think the issue is? Is it a talent level? Is it, like you said, scheme earlier? How are those guys just playing out right now?
Well, fortunately, McKinley went down against Dallas in the second quarter. He had a great week one, and I think he lost like 25 pounds over the offseason, and it just seemed like he started really taking things seriously. Like, he's always had a good work ethic, but for some reason, I don't know whether it's weight or just maybe had a couple shoulder injuries, but he's kind of underperforming. He's never been also great finishing. He's like one of those more pressure pass rushers, kind of like a Brandon Graham. Like, he's someone that can like collapse the pocket, but doesn't always have the best finishing ability. But he looked really exciting early on, but he's been injured. And I don't know, Dante Fowler is just, he's been always kind of a player that's inconsistent, but you kind of see enough flashes where you get excited, but there's not been much. He's just spin move. Like, he consistently does this spin move and it goes nowhere. Like, I don't know why he's so insistent on doing it, but it's just, he really repeatedly just gets picked out all the time. Like, he'll do it and he can't set up properly and the tackle just pushes him to the side and that's it. So I do think it's a talent issue. It's been like that since, you know, they lost, like, once they lost Claiborne and Poe back in 2018, it's been downhill. Because there was a point back in 2017, you had Beasley come off defensive, you know, he was a sack leader, and McKinley's come off a great rookie year. Then you had Poe, Claiborne, and Jack Crawford was even making plays. But they had real depth. Now it's just like, okay, it's Jarrett, and you hope Fowler and McKinley can put together. But other than that, it's just a bunch of guys.
Yeah, it's crazy to me. I mean, and it's always just fascinating when you see some teams kind of, you know, have this level of talent base and then for some reason it just doesn't pick up. But as we saw with the Falcons last year, eventually it did. But, you know, in Dan Quinn's case, he needs a hot start to essentially keep his job. And the final position the final area that I want to focus on defense is the linebacker position. And I'm a little curious about this. Maybe you can clarify. I know Deion Jones is, you know, a stalwart in the middle of the field, in the middle of the defense for Atlanta. But what's the situation like next to him? Because obviously we know Deion is one of the best in the game. But how is the other positions next to Jones working out?
Boy, Lukan's really come on. He had a miss to Chicago game, but for most part of the season, he's been a real difference maker in the run game. He was a big reason why Dallas, that first quarter, like, he had three forced fumbles against Dallas. Two of them recovered. And I thought he was, like, one of the few good players against Green Bay on Monday night. I just think he's really good at challenging offensive linemen at the point. You see a lot of linebackers, they get thrown off once they have to beat, whether it's fullback or an offensive lineman. He's someone that just embraces the physicality of the game. And, you know, he's not one of these, like, 225-pound linebackers. He's someone that's pretty bulky and, you know, he can move as well. So I think to be on the lookout for, I think he's an upgrade with Devondre Campbell, who just doesn't have the instincts or awareness to really play at a high level. I think they had to move on from him. So between him and then this guy, Mekhi Walker, who he's a bit raw, but he has the athleticism because, you know, Quinn and Dimitrov, they're big. They have their own measurables. They have their guys, you know, the spark guys they love. So he falls into that. He's a bit raw and he's missed quite a bit of tackles, but he's a decent rotational guy. But no, Lukan's definitely someone to look out for. I would say besides Jared, he's probably been one of the few standouts. He might actually be out playing Jones right now because Jones, he's been iffy so close.
Yeah, it's weird because last week we did play the Cardinals and Devondre Campbell, I did not think, had a very good game. So
yeah, he does not read the field.
Yeah, obviously he got juked by Teddy Bridgewater pretty badly on his touchdown run. So I don't know. It's always interesting whenever you see former, like, division players moving on, and then I thought the Panthers did a pretty good job of targeting them. But this part of the field will be interesting because obviously Carolina's offense has picked it up the last few weeks, and I would say they've been more efficient. I would say against the Chargers, they were not very good. They got fortunate with short fields, and they were able to convert those into field goals. Last week, I thought it was a complete team effort on offense, and you really saw the making of a Joe Brady offense that you regularly see with when you guys play the Saints. So I expect it to be in, similar to that, a lot of 3 to 4 step dropback for Teddy Bridgewater, targeting DJ Moore in the short and intermediate areas, then looking at Anderson and the intermediate long, and Samuel use in a variety of ways, whether it's on reverses or short or bubble pass screens or deep down the field. And you know, their running back, Mike Davis, who's replaced McCaffrey since he's been injured, he's been pretty good too. So I'm going to be very fascinated to see how this plays out. But I want to ask you before we wrap up a prediction. And we at BetOnline are sponsored, or excuse me, we at Blue Wire are sponsored by BetOnline. And currently the line is Atlanta -1. You know, it's funny because earlier in the week on Sunday, it was Atlanta -4.5. So a lot of money went towards Carolina to bring it down to 1. What do you see happening in this game?
Ah, man, because I wish, like, if I knew the price reports, because there's just so many key players that are on the fringes right now, which obviously with Julio, but not just him, but then you have Carl Allen, Keanu Neal, and Tack McKinley. These are difference makers. So,
I mean, it should also be mentioned that Julio always plays well against Carolina.
He does torch him. Not as, like, he always torches Tampa Bay, but Carolina, especially with those corners right now. Like, I'm just looking at Eli Apple over there, and it's like, ooh. It's a good matchup. But at the same time, like you look at Carolina, I think Curtis Samuel does have big games against the Falcons. I just always remember him, whether it's on a jet sweep or just some screen. Curtis Samuel has a tendency to just break it down. And even when he was on the Jets, Robbie Anderson, I remember looking at the Falcons. So I've always been really impressed about Carolina just when it comes to they play the Falcons, just they always pick on whether it's a certain linebacker or a safety, like I don't know, like they always put up points. Unless Cam had one of those games where he just was not accurate and he was just throwing balls all across the field, for the most part, like their offense always gets at Atlanta. Even when, who's the backup quarterback? Do you remember one year, was it 2016, the Derek Anderson come in relief and like you almost had a crazy comeback?
Yeah, that was a crazy game. It was, it was Derek Anderson. He threw a pick six at the end too.
Yeah, but he threw, I don't know, him and Greg Olsen, I remember, just go, like, I don't know. Like,
yeah, he came, I remember that game pretty well because it was the same game Julio had that crazy, he went out like.
Oh, yeah, that season. Was the Bene but Wickery game. Oh, man, poor Bene but Wickery.
Yeah, that's so what it was.
Game. But even though they want McCaffrey, like, you know, you mentioned Mike Davis before. Isn't Mike Davis, like, the most elusive running back per, like, metrics right now?
He's one of the most elusive, according to PFF's elusive rating. He's certainly up there as far as his elusiveness. Right. Because it's not like he's – you know, it's interesting because whenever you discuss the running back position, I think there's merits on both sides of the ante and the pro running back side. But with Davis, it's not like he's running through, like, huge holes. He's making people miss the line of scrimmage. He's bouncing off ball carriers. He's creating yards himself. So he's doing his part of the job. Now, obviously, there's a discussion we had on if – this type of production, if you can find this type of production from a guy like Davis who's a journeyman, then why are you paying McCaffrey? But that's a different discussion. But like I said, so he's been pretty good. I have to give him credit for that.
He had that spin move. Like he could have been stuffed for like a 2-yard loss. I don't know who the player was. We just bumped past him and turned into like an 18-yard gain. I was like, who is this man right now? But he's killing it. And as you know, the Falcons are a pretty poor tackling team. So that's another one of the main reasons why I'm kind of leaning Carolina. I just think right now, defensively, they can't really stop anybody. And offensively, even though there's probably good matchups there, it's just they don't have the consistency or the cohesiveness, you know, when it comes to game plan. Like, okay, they could get in a bit of a rhythm, but next thing you know, their curl will just call some bubble screen that will be lost for 3 yards, or they'll just run straight up and early, and, you know, there'll be a breakdown. And it's just – whenever you think a good drive's come together, like saw Monday night, they had a 20-play drive. I was like, all right, they're finding some rhythm here, and then they'll just run it on 2nd and 8, and I'll go for 2 yards, and then Matt Ryan will make a mistake on 3rd down. It's just there's no consistency right now in Atlanta, and it's hard to put any faith in them winning a game unless it's like just a real prime matchup, like against Denver. They play Denver a few weeks, maybe if Drew Lock's not around, they'll win that. But Carolina, they're surging right now, and I think they have a lot of playmakers, so. If I make a prediction, I'm going to go Carolina 31-27.
Yeah, I would probably agree with that. I think Carolina pulls this out. I think it'll be close. Like I said, it's a division game. These games are always unpredictable. no one, and I repeat, no one, at least to my knowledge, picked the Falcons last year going into New Orleans and just beating them up. So things, weird things can happen in the NFC South, and I expect another unpredictable game. But I, as far as my own educated opinion, I think Carolina does win the game outright. But who knows? Again, these games are always unpredictable. The Falcons are sort of desperate. Whenever you have a desperate team, it can get a little interesting, like I said.
I also want to mention, like, it's going to be fascinating to see, because I remember, obviously, Shula and then Turner. Like, it's good, like, seeing Rule and Brady going against the Falcons defense being nice, like, you know, just seeing what their strategies are. I'm going to see that a little bit of a chess match. I really don't want to call it a chess match because I thoroughly expect Joe Brady to just pile up some crazy plays to pick up part of the Falcons defense. But it's going to be a bit of a transition because I haven't seen much of Carolina. Obviously, I watch highlights, but, you know, I've been thoroughly impressed about what Brady's doing over there.
Yeah, definitely. He's been pretty good, I would say, this season. Obviously, there's some areas that he has to clean up. Too many early down runs, in my opinion, where Teddy Bridgewater can take advantage of some of these loaded boxes with play action. But it's tough to find too many faults in a shortened off season, completely new offense, and a very young coordinator making the switch from college to the NFL. So, so far, so good. But again, Alan, I really want to thank you for joining us. I mean, this has been a pretty great episode, and I think it'll be another classic NFC South rivalry game on Sunday.
Definitely going to be entertaining. Even though there's not much buzz for it, you know, watching NFC South, points will be scored. And I don't know, I think Falcons-Panthers is always tends to be one or two moments where tempers flare and things get wild. You know, nothing like Steve Smith, D'Angelo. We can't go back too old school or legit punches thrown, but look, that's always entertaining. And I think I'm glad just that Carolina, they seem to find, you know, some semblance now, because last year, just Kyle Allen, that was a bit of a train wreck. So I'm excited to see Teddy B. And it should be a real high score game.
Yeah, for sure. And is there anything else you want to plug before you head off?
So I'm going to be working with this app before called Locker Room. They have, they're trying to create this concept where it's like, okay, you have an app and you could get people involved, like the whole locker room thing. It's like they're a part of you. It's like live recordings. It's not so much podcasting. It's more shows. And your shouts to the Wars and Jeff Darlington there made some major investments in it. So I'm looking forward to being a part of that. You know, other than that, I don't have anything really else to promote. But you know, I always enjoy seeing what you got posted, Billy, just when it comes to, and I think I have all the NFC South teams. Like, I love Panthers Twitter. Like, I know Anthony Rizzuti, shout out to him. Hopefully I got his name right. I know he's a good dude. And as you know, Josh Norris, Jonathan Jones, like, even though they're more national beat now, I just always got a good feeling with, you know, either for the Panthers or coming from that background, you know, compared to the Bucks. Salute to the Panthers.
Yeah, ditto to that. And Falcons Twitter, I can say the same thing. So again, that was Alan Stark. You can find him on Twitter at @Alan_STRK. Alan, thanks again.
Thank you.
You might not be at the game this year, but you can still be in on all the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start off by wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use promo code BLUEWIRE at BetOnline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.